Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Euskaltel's first quarter 2020 results presentation. The management of Euskaltel will run you through the presentation materials that can be found at Euskaltel's website, which will be followed by a Q&A session. You can ask a question by phone by pressing 01 on your telephone keypad. You can also send your questions through the webcast platform at any time during the presentation. I am now pleased to introduce Mr. José Miguel García, CEO of Euskaltel. Please, sir, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Lydia, and good afternoon, and welcome to the Euskaltel first quarter 2020 results conference call. My name is Lydia Estel, is José Miguel García, I'm the CEO of the company. Joining me is Ángel Alaraburga-Buega, our CFO, and Alfonso Enriquez, our Head of Strategy and Investor Relationships. First of all, and this is obviously a must, I hope that you, your families, and your friends are in good health. I hope that we all together, this is what the Euskaltel team is working together with everybody to overcome this unprecedented COVID-19 situation as soon as possible. And hopefully we'll get back to our families and our business as usual in a stronger manner. So thank you for that. In the following presentation, our attendees, majority two. One is to obviously I want to explain or summarize the main operating and financial KPIs of the business, but at the same time I want to be able to give you some visibility as to how Euskaltel and the Euskaltel team is managing the COVID-19 unprecedented situation that we have in place. So if we go to page number three, and just to start at the outset, Euskaltel has started the year with a very strong delivery on our guidance. For us is very important, and that's despite the COVID-19 situation, particularly starting in the second half of March of this year. Our main operating KPIs in the first quarters are that we mass market fixed customers net adds grew by close to 400 in the period, negatively impacted during the last 15 days of March by the portability restrictions imposed by the Spanish government during the state of emergency. However, broadband services grew by 3,000 in the quarter, further increasing the penetration of higher value services in the customer base. And the other important aspect is that 8 million households in the quarter were reached more than 13 million addressable households, and that sets and ready for our national expansion. The other important aspect is that revenue evolution was flat in the quarter. However, profitability increased strongly with an 8% year-on-year growth to 88 million euros in the quarter and reaching an EBITDA margin of 51%. This is the result of a very clear focus on delivery of our synergy and efficiency initiatives as we outlined in a strategic roadmap last year. This strong EBITDA performance has resulted in cash generation with a 6% year-on-year cash flow growth in the quarter. Going on to page number four, since the start of the COVID-19 situation in mid-March, the company has established a very well-defined plan to cope with this extraordinary situation. Our three main priorities are keeping customers connected, reinforcing the service of our customers, and more importantly, probably the most important for us, is keeping our employees and our customers safe. That's for us is the most important. These are the three pillars of our key initiatives, which, by the way, we manage on a daily basis. We have a squad team, which I lead, which we connect on every day at 11 o'clock, and we manage these three dynamics on a daily basis. Our traffic has grown in fixed voice to more than 65% during the start of this situation. Fixed data traffic has grown by more than 71%, and on-demand television consumption has grown by more than 32%. And just to give you some pointers on some of the things we're doing, because I really feel proud of my team and some of the things that we're doing. 70% of our stores are open, with around 30% of our staff managing. We have around 1,600 events on a daily basis in these stores, and I think that's a great effort from our team. We have set up a very special B2B customer service and customer support for all our large accounts as well as SMEs. We'll comment a little bit later on, but on a daily basis, I receive emails and letters of thank you from many of our customer CEOs, giving us thanks for what we're doing. We have over 800 people working on a daily basis to ensure continued network robustness. And this is very important And a lot of our customers have appreciated our proximity, our closeness to our customers have given tremendous results and providing a great service. And so that is leading to a tremendous network operating normally, with traffic being managed despite the increase without any major disruptions to the service. In fact, in this period, as you would expect, maybe some major congestions, we've had very, very small incidents of congestions, even network failure. Obviously, the other important is to increase services, to make sure that particularly families and the businesses are able to cater for some of the demands they're getting. So we've revamped, or we've included a lot, a high volume of new television, offerings and channels, particularly for children's, and that's been made free of charge for our customers. We've added 30 gigabits per month on mobile, in order to make sure that people have enough mobility data on the mobiles. Data allowance has been increased to our customers, particularly on a special need basis, and we feel very proud on this. We've been working very close with the local governments and the local cities in order to connect some of the more needy families. We have connected over almost 2,000 families, and we've connected them with broadband in order to make sure that their children can actually access the tele education. And that's been a special coordination effort with all the local governments in each of the regions. And television access has been provided to hospitals. This is another very successful initiative which has been tremendous. We're providing free television to anybody hospitalized, independent whether they are in the use cartel on our app. And it's been greatly used. We have had the last week over almost 2,000 users connecting to this service from hospital. And once again, I think it's been a tremendous initiative. Obviously, the other important aspect for us, probably most important, is keeping our people safe. We started the confinement, or we started the teleworks, 1 week before the exit of the government restrictions. And that has resulted in basically no confirmed infections from the use cartel team. We feel very proud of that because we've taken very early measurements and we are on top of that. 100% of our employees are working from home, and 90% of our companies, supporting companies, particularly the call centers, are working actually from teleworking. The other aspect that I feel, again, that we've done tremendously is we set up a special squad team that's helping our families, our employees' families, to manage any particularly COVID-19 issues that may arise within their family. And once again, that's having tremendous support for our families. So if we move on to page number 5, where I want to cover some of the control operating and some of the financial impacts of the COVID-19. I think we made a special emphasis to control the situation, just like we do with most of the other issues that we have in the business. But this was obviously an extraordinary. So portability restrictions imposed due to the state of emergency have resulted in an approximately 50% reduction in both daily gross adds as well as churn from normal levels, resulting in a stable customer base. I think this is important. In fact, I would say that rather than stable, as you've seen on the numbers, we've actually managed to grow our customer base despite the stop on portability. So I think this is one of the control measures that I think has been successful in the company. Customer suspensions and bill returns, which is obviously key priority, stopping a priority in terms of managing requests, are being monitored on a daily basis, and initiatives have been put in place to mitigate the cash flow impact of these initiatives. So we're managing daily and we're managing those customers. And so far, I must say that we've had very, very good results in terms of managing that impact. So therefore, Euskaltel's financial position remains solid with almost 100 million euros cash balance and more than 4 years of average debt maturity, which again gives us a very solid financial position. Our cash balance has also been increased in April by 150 million as a result of the drawdown of our revolving credit facility. So that obviously also gives us additional strength. If we move on to page number 6, which obviously some of you have actually asked us the question, the good thing about our national expansion is we started very early. As we said you in previous calls, we've been working on our national expansion as late as last year, and particularly during January and February. And that's allowed us to be able to report today that we've increased our our national coverage by more than 8 million households for print this quarter, reaching to around 13 million households in nationwide coverage so far. And this is obviously be very important. We expect to complete more than 18 million households by the end of the second quarter. So that's obviously an important aspect. And once again, demonstrated that in this aspect, we have business as usual as far as the national expansion is concerned. The other important aspect is we started connecting customers, and I think we mentioned this at the business plan presentation. We've started to connect customers as late as like January and February. That's allowed us to connect customers with the Virgin brand and be able to test all our processes end-to-end with the Virgin. That's been very useful because basically we've had a great success in terms of connecting those Virgin customers, and that's allowed us also to test all those processes prior to the restrictions on portability. So having said that, we obviously feel very confident that we are ready to launch our national expansion Virgin brand as soon as the portability restrictions are over. Let me now comment a little bit on the operational KPIs for the quarter. As I mentioned, Euskaltel addressable footprint has significantly increased this quarter, as we can see on the slide. The total footprint now is 13 million homes. We've added around 8 million addressable homes through our wholesale agreements with Orange and Telefonica. And the company is expecting to reach, as I mentioned previously, 18 million households, a national footprint in the second quarter of this year. If we move on to page 9, our commercial momentum in March, as mentioned at the outset, was limited due to the number of portability restrictions. Consequently, the second half of March experienced a decline in daily gross adds, which was offset by the reduction in churn, resulting in a stable customer base. I think this is important. As a result, as I mentioned, we did report growth in terms of fixed service customers, showing a continuous positive trend in the previous quarters as well. And we expect to get back to our planned trend as soon as the portability restrictions are removed. Now, having said that, the good thing is that obviously we've had time to focus on our current customer base. And so if we move on to page number 10, our high-value customer base continues to grow, driven by year-on-year, quarter-on-quarter services take-up in broadband, television, and mobile services, as we can see on the chart. Broadband services has increased by 3,000 in the quarter. Postpaid mobile increased by 1,000 in the quarter, and television services increased by 2,000 in the quarter, with now television penetration reaching 70% of our fixed customer base. Customer quality, which is something obviously is key for us, continues to improve with a record high 3.69 services contracted per customer. Now, why is this so important for us? We'll see, and probably Angel will highlight it. Obviously, leading these sort of services uptake is obviously helping us to grow our revenue, particularly in our core customers year on year. And we've reported growth, revenue growth on our core customers, and that's obviously important. That's been offset maybe by less only mobile revenues and obviously less equipment sales. But for us, the important thing is that we continue to deliver growth in our core customers' revenue, and that's important, particularly year on year. If we move on to the next slide, the small and medium enterprise and large account customer growth continues to grow on a positive trend, reaching almost 16,000 customers at the end of the first quarter of this year. Now, the COVID-19 crisis has resulted in increased demand from our B2B customers. Teleworking and cybersecurity needs have significantly increased during this period. And our B2B customers, as I said in the outset, are greatly appreciating Euskaltel's very close, very local service management during this situation. As I mentioned, I constantly receiving, grateful notes and emails from the CEOs of our customers. And of course, they're increasing their backup lines, they're increasing the bandwidth lines. We're working 24 hours, 7 days a week with our enterprise customers in making sure their services is up, to make sure that things like what we're doing with teleworking and teleworks and their network is not compromised is up. And I think no doubt that our customers will greatly appreciate and will see a continued growth in this area going forward, particularly after the crisis. Now, Let me now pass on to Angel, our CFO, who will walk you through the financial review of the company in the first quarter of this year. Angel, please.
Thank you, José Miguel. On slide 13, we saw top-line performance during the quarter. Mass market revenue remained stable, driven by positive customer growth and stable ARPUs. B2B business revenue, which include SMEs and large accounts, has been also stable versus a year ago. Please take into consideration that first quarter B2B revenue is positively impacted by the recognition of the revenue coming from the agreement signed with the Basque government for a full year total of 4 million euros recognized in the first Q as per IFRS 15. The agreement totals 12 million euros divided between Q1 2018, Q1 2019, and Q1 2020. Wholesale and other revenue also grew by 14% year-on-year. As a result, total revenue grew by 0.1% year-on-year, keeping revenue in positive territory for second consecutive Q. Slide number 14 shows how the continued efficiency measures that have been implemented strongly drive the company's profitability. Gross margin grew by 70 basic points year-on-year, due to the low margin customer equipment revenue and the savings obtained by TV cost savings as a result of the football rights cancellation in Asturias. I would like to especially highlight the 12% reduction in GIA expenses in the year, mainly driven by a better management of marketing and customer care costs and by a decrease in personnel costs as a result of the headcount reduction occurred between June and July last year. In slide 15, we can see that as a result of the implementation of the previously mentioned operating efficiencies and synergies, EBITDA margin reached 51.1% of revenue in the first quarter of the year, 380 basic points year-on-year growth. The result was a strong 8.1% year-on-year EBITDA growth in the first Q of 2020. The positive year-on-year EBITDA growth trend is consolidating with EBITDA growth in three consecutive quarters. On slide 16, we saw investments and operational cash flow evolution. Our CapEx decreased in the first quarter of the year to 11% of revenue, due mainly to portability restrictions imposed by the Spanish government during the second half of March. CapEx, excluding SAC, grew year-on-year mainly driven by investments focused on the integration of IT systems and the investments needed to deploy a national level footprint. As a result of the strong EBITDA growth in the Q, the company managed to generate an operating cash flow close to 29% of the revenue in the quarter, despite the high CapEx. The company's operating cash flow margin is a clear reference in the telecom industry. As a result, cash generation in the Q grew by more than 5% versus previous year to 49 million euros. To conclude the financial review, on slide 17, you can see that in the first Q of the year, the company managed to generate enough cash to distribute an interim dividend of 23 million euros while reducing leverage to 4.1 times EBITDA from 4.2 times at the end of last year. The liquidity situation of the company is comfortable going forward with a reduced cost of debt at 2.55% and an average debt maturity of 4.2 years. Nevertheless, the company is continuously working on actions to increase its liquidity and optimize its capital structure. And I will now give back the word to José Miguel for him to wrap up the presentation.
Thank you very much, Ángel. So, as a result of a strong financial performance, namely this, the 8% year-on-year EBITDA growth, the 6% year-on-year operating cash flow growth, the deleverage to 4.1 times, the controlled operating and financial COVID-19 impact, the company has decided to maintain its 2020 guidance presented in the 2020-2025 business plan on March 10th, and also its 2019 dividend. The 2019 dividend will be 0.31 euros per share. An interim dividend of 0.14 euros per share was paid in February this year. The company will pay a complementary dividend of 0.71 euros per share in July this year. So in summary, the company has delivered strong financial results amidst the COVID-19 situation, controlled COVID-19 impact in the business, national expansion ready for full commercial launch, customer base and revenue is maintained in the COVID-19 situation, strong EBITDA growth in the quarter due to continuous focus on efficiency initiatives as defined in a strategic roadmap, strong cash generation of 49 million euros in the quarter, resulting in strong debt, as I've mentioned, strong net debt reduction to 4.1 times. As a result of a strong financial performance, we maintain, as I've already mentioned, guidance as well as dividend payment. Once again, thank you very much for your attention and keep safe. Let's open up for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Q&A session starts now. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. You can also send your questions through the webcast platform. Questions by phone will be answered first. Thank you. The first question comes from Ivón Leal from BBVA. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. I don't know if you can hear me well. Yes?
Yes, perfect.
Okay, got it. Okay, José Miguel, maybe we could wrap up on what are the positive and negative impacts of the COVID-19, okay? So the first one is, if we take out the SOHO segment, okay, do you think the suspension of portabilities is having a positive or negative impact on your net adds? And obviously, taking aside the expansion plan that you're going to launch as soon as this is over. The second one is, I think you mentioned through the last month that we should keep an eye on the suspension of SOHOs and maybe students. So I don't know if at this time you have a sense of what is the damage there, what is the potential losses. And maybe just the final one is on, I guess, on the second quarter, there's going to be significant savings, I guess, on all the commercial spending and SAC, which is what is going to compensate the loss of SOHOs. And this is why you're reiterating your guidance for 2020. Am I right on that?
Okay, let's go through the questions. Now, positive impacts, negative impacts. I mean, I think it's very clear on the presentation, right? Obviously, we have less commercial activity, which for us, Q2 is generally a very Q1, end of Q1, particularly March, because we do have a little bit of seasonality on January, February, coming towards promotions. You've got the Cuesta de Enero for Spain, so there is a little bit of activity. Obviously, that seasonality, but March is normally a very strong March for us, as well as April and May and June. These are typically very good months in terms of momentum. So that's obviously an impact. But on the other hand, obviously, we've got a positive impact on the churn. That keeps the base stable. We would prefer, obviously, to have the portabilities because we believe that we are reaching strong momentum in our daily net adds, as we've seen in the last two quarters of last year, and as we predicted, as we have got planned for the first half of this year. So we would have preferred. But having the COVID situation, and I think also very specific management within the team addressing these areas, we are managing to make sure that we keep a stable customer base within the restrictions of the portability. And the result is that growth, and we continue to be confident that we will continue to deliver growth in the coming years. There is a positive, and you've mentioned there is a positive activity. There's a positive there in terms of cost because we have less activity, so therefore less cost, particularly CapEx, SAC cost. And that's obviously what's coming through as well into the numbers. We expect the portabilities will get back to normally immediately on the date of the end of the emergency of the situation, which the government has estimated around the 9th or the 10th of May, and we expect portabilities then get back to normality. following that date. So that's a little bit the impact that I think the suspension of the portabilities will have on us. Obviously, it's different depending on each operator. So I guess this is specific to us. Then the SOHOs, as you know, we commented even during the March situation. For us, suspension is key. Managing those suspensions is key, particularly the SOHO. We've done a good job in terms of managing those suspensions. The student suspensions, which are seasonality, as you know, they come in July, August, we've brought forward. And that means that we've managed that, we know what the extent of those student suspensions are. They're very much in line with what we normally get other years, but obviously they're just a couple of months ahead of schedule. Well, that's fine. Those guys will get back. And in fact, the fact that we've managed it, we should also be better in terms of how we actually recover those students, coming back in September, probably in terms of churn. So that's obviously, again, good effort in terms of managing that impact. And then the other aspect that you're mentioning in terms of the loss of SOHOs, we're doing a similar exercise. We don't want those SOHOs to convert into churn. We do understand that obviously they will suspend. We have had an increase in suspension from the SOHOs, particularly in the last 30 days, and that obviously is something we're managing. So we're contacting with those SOHOs, we're allowing a suspension mechanism, and that's obviously allowing us to make sure we identify that. The impact so far, because it's managed, we don't believe is sufficient to have any deviation in the full year sort of numbers that we've got so far. Of course, that's assuming that the date to restart the return of these companies will be around the 10th of May, which is what we're expecting to happen, right? One more little comment that you mentioned on the Virgin. Again, I think we commented at the presentation of the plan. Virgin always had a test period, which was January, February. We would then have during March, April, a what we call a soft launch period, and we were always going to be expecting to launch our national brand post Easter. So in that sense, our plans for Virgin have not changed, and so the suspension of portability as far as our Virgin net add growth for the remainder of 2020 remain intact, as long obviously as the government restrictions remained to the dates that have been reported.
Okay, thank you, José Miguel.
Thank you. The next question comes from Pedro Oliveira from CaixaBank BPI. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. The first question I would ask you is a bit related to what you were answering. Is can we assume this level of OPEX as more or less the base for the rest of the year? Or as the commercial activity picks up, also on OPEX and not just on CAPEX, we are going to see a bit of increase there. And my second question is regarding Telefónica's decision to launch unlimited mobile data plans, how do you believe that will impact margins for you going forward? And if you can provide some color on how you have this issue tackled with a new agreement with Orange. Thank you.
Okay. In terms of the OPEX, again, guys, we've been working on transforming the company since June last year. And I've been saying from day one, the most important thing for us was to work on, extracting synergies from the, integration of three companies into one, point number one. Number two, achieving a single operational business, function, the factory, as I call it, that can provide efficient and efficacy in terms of operations end-to-end customer processes. And that's what we've been doing. So the work that we've done the last, 8-9 months has been fantastic for us, because what it's doing is preparing a lean and mean factory operation, not only to actually manage our current brands, but more importantly, to make sure that efficient brand is going to be a solid platform, a solid foundation for our national expansion. That's been our strategic roadmap. And so what you're seeing is, first of all, a lot of that work happening. By the way, we've also had cost increments. So, you know, you see the cost savings, as you're calling them, but, you know, we have had cost increment because we are actually preparing for the national expansion. So that's, you know, that's also, you know, having incremental costs. So what you're seeing is the efficiencies and the efficacies of our, you know, strategic development coming to light. We always knew that those efficiencies, you know, they still have to happen. There's still more to come because obviously, you know, systems and processes don't get implemented overnight. Some systems can take up to a year and a half to get completely integrated. Some network assets need to also have a process of, you know, of integration. So we're still in the process. And you're still going to be seeing some OPEX and some costs and some, you know, and some CAPEX savings. Obviously, since March, particularly the last 15 days of March, you have seen an increment of savings, as I've mentioned. We know we've got less activity, so you're going to get, you know, less, you know, less cost. Those costs will come back. Obviously, it will come back as soon as the portability is up. Those costs are going to come back. But by the way, they come back with a more efficiency. You know, as just before the portability restrictions, more than 50% of our sales were already non-face-to-face. So imagine, this company went from last year having almost 80% of our sales were face-to-face. These are shops and, you know, Salesforce. Now we actually, you know, before the COVID-19 situation, you know, more than 50% were already non-face-to-face. That's where a lot of the savings, that's a lot of the cost savings. And by the way, those non-face-to-face, which is inbound, outbound, online, member-get-member initiatives, those initiatives are actually giving us cost savings as well as CAPEX savings. Now, they're going to continue. In fact, during the COVID-19 period, in fact, the non-face-to-face initiatives on the few net ads that we've got is actually more like 75%. So already 75% of our net ads are actually coming from non-face-to-face during the COVID-19 situation. By the way, that's the sort of percentage that we need for the Virgin brand launch. In other words, we want that 70-75%, you know, non-face-to-face channels when we launch national expansion. So during the COVID-19, in our traditional footprints, we are already experiencing that 70-30 mix of channels. So in that sense, that's where a lot of the, let's call it efficiency initiatives that we keep on mentioning on our calls coming from. So those are, that's sort of goodness that we started back in, you know, June last year. Those are coming through. They're going to continue to coming. But by the way, we've got some additional costs because we're launching a national expansion, and that's got costs associated with it, right? So, you know, the results that you see here is a combination of some of the efficiency initiatives that we started back last year. Some of the, there are some costs related with national expansion, and yet there are some, you know, sort of, you know, specific costs related with the stopping of portabilities and the slowing down of the sales activity, which will get back to normal once the restrictions are over. So that's the combination that you're seeing here. Overall is goodness that is absolutely sustainable, which is what we want. Because what we want that is an efficient, lean and mean platform on which to build our national expansion. And that's what we're achieving. That's why we say at the outset of this presentation, delivering on our strategic roadmap, delivering on our business plan. And that for us is very important, right? In terms of what the competition is doing with mobile, I mean, you know, there's a lot of, you know, mobile-only offers in the market. I mean, we know the low-cost guys, you know, it's mobile-only. Frankly, not really sure why Telefonica has done that. Maybe something tactical because of the portabilities. Not sure. I guess you'd have to ask them. You know, we're focused on value. We're focused on value offerings. You know, our national expansion offer with Virgin, you know, brand is going to be on value because we believe that that's where the market is going to go. And by the way, if you consider after, you know, post-COVID-19, believe me, you know, two things are going to drive it. One is customers' experience at home, in terms of having a complete global telecommunications offer with reliable services. That's going to be number one. Number two, if it does happen to be some, you know, some sort of economical downturn, like the one we had back in 2009, guess what? Remember what was actually, you know, valuable there. That's when, for example, Jasta, which, as you know, I was leading, that's when it grew the most because customers, even during the downturn economy, look for value. And I think, you know, those are the two tendencies that are going to drive our market post-COVID-19. The fact that customers are going to be more wary about having a solid telecommunications global offer in at home and in their business. And on top of that, if there is a little bit, you know, if there is economical downturn, guess what? You know, value is going to be considered important going forward. So my view, that's where we were pitching with our national expansion. And, you know, right now, we consider that still the right approach, the right strategy going forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Akhil Dattani from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking the questions. I've got a couple to start with on the guidance, which I just wanted to understand a little bit better. Obviously, you've reiterated guidance, which is comforting. I guess I just wanted to understand the mechanics behind that as we think about what's happening with COVID. So I guess if we start with revenues, I mean, you've got slight growth in revenues in Q1. I'd assume Q2 is not going to be that different because of the lockdown at the moment and sort of SME SOHO trend you're seeing at the moment. So that would mean your revenue guidance implies sort of mid-single-digit revenue growth for H2. So I just wanted to check, is that right? And when we think about the moving parts of potentially a bit of softness from COVID offset by the national expansion, can you just help us understand the puts and takes there just so we understand kind of what gets us to obviously the guidance on top line? Second point is on KPIs. I mean, I guess it's just a clarification, is that when you're reiterating guidance, does that include KPIs? Because I guess with mobile, it might be a bit more difficult because of the lockdown, and that does have an impact around mobile trends. So just to understand what the KPIs is also reiterated. And then thirdly, I was just interested around some of the comments you've made around behavioral changes you're seeing through COVID in terms of, you know, prioritization of value, higher data consumption usage, things like this. Do you think that's likely in any way to change the way you approach your Virgin launch, or do you simply see that as more support for your value strategy? Thanks a lot.
Okay, in terms of revenue, obviously, I mean, you know, what drives revenue is customers. We've seen we have a solid customer base. You know, we always expected to have, you know, growth in our customer base. Having said that, in our regional footprint, if you remember, the guidance was for one digit sort of growth, right? Both on customers as well as on revenue. So our traditional, top line was a slight growth. It was 1-2% sort of growth, if I recall well. But obviously, you know, we're extracting the synergies in the EBITDA, which is what's happening at the moment, right? And we saw some value creation through margin and through EBITDA, more efficiency, better cash management, better capex management, right? That's what we saw in the traditional regions. And of course, we want an efficient platform on which to stand on to launch our national expansion, because we want to make sure we grow profitably. And this has always been, you know, our key message in our business plan. You know, we want to, you know, make sure we're growing profitably. And that's what, you know, our Virgin brand, you know, national expansion is all about. We want to grow profitably. And it's through that profitable growth, national expansion, that we intend to create value for shareholders. So obviously, as far as we're concerned, our national expansion is key because if we do have a very efficient, you know, platform, and basis on which to work on, that'll give us that profitable growth that we all want. And of course, you know, we're still confident in accordance with the timings that we, as I explained during the presentation and in the previous question, we're still confident we can continue on that, building that profitable or that lean and mean sort of efficient factory. And then on top of that, be able to launch our national expansion and deliver profitable growth as we've actually planned on our business plan. So that's where our confidence on guidance comes from, right? It comes from the fact that we are continuing to build a solid, efficient platform, which was the original aim, which we are continuing to make sure we keep a sustainable, you know, traditional regions, our brands, you know, Euskaltel, R, Telecable, you know, these brands are going to continue to deliver value, which they are, you know, the proof is in the pudding, is Quora. And based on that, it becomes a great platform on which then to grow Virgin nationwide to deliver profitable growth. And it's through that profitable growth combined with the traditional regions that provides the total sort of stakeholder value creation on our business plan. So we're still confident on those dynamics. You know, so, you know, and that's where our confidence on guidance comes from. And of course, the KPIs, as you rightly say, you know, may vary slightly because, yes, you're right about the top line in terms of, you know, customers. You know, that may, you know, we may not grow as much in terms of gross adds, but then we've got the churn upside, right? So, you know, at the end of the day, what you really want to see is a stable customer base that's delivering value, right? Because in the traditional regions, it was always going to be about that. I mean, 1-2% sort of top line growth means that you manage a good, stable customer base. That's what it's all about. It's about managing a good customer base, you know, throughout the line. And that's exactly what we're doing. So even on those KPIs, you know, in terms of the traditional regions, is about managing a stability of our customer base. And that's what we're doing. That's what gets reflected on the first quarter results. And then, of course, launching our national expansion brand with Virgin and getting profitable growth on that front. And that's where, you know, we want, you know, the growth to come from. You know, the more than, you know, one digit growth, you know, for us is to come from the national expansion Virgin brand, right? And with, you know, 18 million homes passed, you know, starting from zero basically, you know, we believe we can do that. And, you know, getting to your second part of your question, which I think is very interesting, you know, we always said, you know, my firm belief was that we need to present a value proposition to customers. I mean, you heard that back in June. You heard back in, you know, in September last year. You heard that in, you know, Q3 results. You heard that in Q4 results. You heard that on the business plan presentation. That's what you've heard about. You know, Virgin is going to be about value proposition, not price, value. And value is about a good price, but more importantly, good service, global service. And that's exactly what, you know, what I believe the tendency post-COVID-19 is going to be about. You know, we've had, you know, 21 million families in their homes for the last 30, 40 days, right? And their life has been living around, you know, their internet, their, you know, telecommunication services, everything. The kids schooling, you know, the parents teleworking, connecting with the families, even ordering their food. Right, it's been around telecoms. And this is the reason why we've been very much adamant about being very close to our customer base. And also it's going to be very, very important going forward, you know, when we're launching services in the future. Because, you know, customers are going to want, you know, that, you know, robustness in terms of a global service. And that's going to be value. Good price, because we may get a little bit of an economical downturn. So therefore, price is going to be essential, just like it was back in 2007 in Spain. But it's also going to be about service, you know, because, you know, it's not good, you know, if you're suddenly your network is not, if you've got congestion on your mobile, if your data rights are not correct, if suddenly you're not getting a proper television offering, even if it's not high premium, but you do want television because kids are going to be at home, you know, they're not going to be going around, you know, so therefore you want that. So it's all about service. And that's exactly the pitch that we spoke about Virgin, you know, 9 months ago. So, you know, for us, I think it's reinforcing our positioning. And I think, you know, I'm pretty sure that the market and our competitors and many of the initiatives, you know, are going to move in that direction. Fortunately, I think we've been pitching this direction and working to that direction for the last 9 months, and some of the results have been reflected in the Q1 results.
Thank you. The next question comes from Soomit Datta from New Street Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, a couple of questions, please. One, on the residential business, can I just clarify, please, when you talk about a 50% fall in gross adds and churn, why is that number not close to 100% out of interest? Does that imply you're still managing to install customers even though And there's been a number portability ban, and even though now I thought the restrictions were on installations. So just to clarify that. And then secondly, and linking into that in a way, on the Virgin expansion, I guess your expectation is that once the country opens up again, we're back to where we were and everything's back to normal. But is it not fair to say that there's going to be a legacy of consumer behavior such that people won't necessarily want engineers in their properties installing new lines when they've already got a perfectly decent working broadband connection? So it's difficult to say, I guess, but I would expect there to be some consumer behavioral shifts around installations. But I'd be interested to get your perspective on that, please.
Yep.
And then just I had a follow-up, so maybe just answer that first. Thanks.
All right. Okay. That's a very good question. It's a very good question because it's in the core of what we do in terms of activities at Euskaltel. The first thing is that the reason you see this, reduced activity but not zero, I mean not zero activity, is because not every customer churns and not every customer gets provisioned with a portability. So there are non-portability type connections. And the other thing, which actually leads to your second question, over the last 9 months particularly, in order to actually exercise an efficient model for Virgin, and not only for Virgin, but also for our traditional regions, we have been implementing in those end-to-end extreme processes, for example, the self-installation. So today, there's a relatively high percentage of our customers that get self-installed. Not only mobile, which obviously is a no-brainer, right? You can self-install a mobile quite easily, and just about all the carriers do it. But more difficult on the fixed. And we've actually developed a self-installation for fixed, which is very useful, right? And that means that basically we almost have just a delivery like an Amazon sort of. We deliver the router for you, and bang, you're getting a bit of assistance either on the apps or you're getting assistance on the call center. And guess what? You're doing your translation yourself, just like a normal parcel delivery from Amazon. So you're getting the box, and then you're self-installing it. So there is some churns. For example, not all the churners come from portabilities. We get churners from people disconnecting because of bad payment or because of simply, not continuing the service. So you get churn from, from other things, not just from the portability. And you also get sales activities from non-portability. And you can actually provision customers on self-provisioning, both from particularly on mobile. That's the reason why you'll see a lot of mobile portabilities probably when the number of portabilities come out this month. You'll say, there'll be portabilities, not only because of the fact that the regulator has not stopped 100% the portabilities, has allowed a minimum of 25% on a per receiving party portability, but also because there is a self-provisioning aspect of those portabilities, which obviously has been played. And that's likely to be a future as well. We started this like months back because we wanted that efficient end-to-end process for Virgin as well as for our regions. But we can see that a lot of operators are going through the self-provisioning process as well, and even going to packaging without portabilities. By the way, we had always a non-portability package. It's a product we call takeaway. It's called takeaway literally, and it means that this is the reason why sometimes portabilities don't match up with net growth. Like in a few quarters, Q4 in particular, we had some negative portabilities, and people were asking us, how come you've got, positive net? That's the reason why not all portabilities, not all installation, not all new customers go for portabilities. And that stuff, I think, is increasing. So more and more we're seeing customers going to a non-portability type provisioning process as opposed to 100% portability. That's likely to grow post-COVID-19, which means that the self-provisioning process for mobile and the self-provisioning process for fixed as well as television are going to be higher, which they were. In the past, customers were quite, quite happy for you just, coming, install it for me, right? Which obviously represents a cost, by the way. And one of the reasons why we're reducing costs is because we're doing a lot more self-provisioning in the company. So that's one of the reasons why we've been able to reduce costs, is because we're offering customers, something, you can install it yourself. And some customers, particularly the younger customers, are preferring that to anybody walking in their house, even before the COVID-19. So that's something that's interesting. And I think I've sort of answered, why there is activity, and also the the fact that in the future, I agree with you, there may be a change and there'll be more self-installations. Today, in, for example, in Euskaltel, which we started in Zeros, I like about 9 months ago, and you know, it probably took us about 3 months to get the self-provisioning process in place in Euskaltel. Today, we're probably around the 15-20% self-installations. So could that go up to 50%? Probably. In Virgin, could that go up to even beyond 50%? Maybe, right? For us, the more the merrier, because it means we've got a process that's user-friendly, that's fast, that means, you know, the least intervention into the customer homes. By the way, that suits the customer. By the way, that suits our P&L as well. So I think you're right. There will be more self-provisioning process. We've started that probably ahead of some of our competitors because we wanted to get that sort of lean and mean end-to-end processes easy happening. And, of course, this has become very useful for the COVID-19. I think you had another question.
Yeah, that's really clear. Thank you. And I did have a follow-up, please. Just on the SME segment, I mean, maybe I've misinterpreted this slightly, but you seem relatively sanguine about that segment and the outlook, you know, with a sort of suspension mechanism in place and then hopefully sort of things reverting back to normal fairly soon. But, I mean, bigger picture, you know, the IMF are thinking the Spanish economy will contract by 8% in 2020, you know, a similar outlook for the rest of Europe. Surely the prospect for the SME market has got to be a little bleak in the near term. But you seem a little bit more optimistic about that than I might have expected.
Okay, that's a good question as well. You've asked very good questions, and I'm glad you asked them because I think it's important. I mean, it's very easy to look at Spain from a you know, bird's eye view, right, which is what everybody's doing at the moment, and it's fantastic. But, you know, underneath the covers, there's a lot of stuff happening, and there's a lot of insight that people are missing, right? Let's start with the SME. First of all, we always, you know, the first thing we took my sleep was the SMEs. This guy's asking for suspension. How serious is it going to be? And we did a clear calculation. We went back to 2008. We saw what happened in 2008 during the downturn economy. We started to monitor daily. You know, but we're now monitoring all our KPIs on a daily basis. We have a dashboard on a daily basis. It's now active from the 1st of January. So we know what happens with our customer base. We know what happens with daily, you know, churners on a daily basis. So we started to see those suspensions coming in. Right? We said, whoa, what is this about? So we clearly started to analyzing, you know, the degree. First thing we saw, some of the students saying, well, you know, guys, you know, I don't think I'm going to go back to university. So, you know, rather than doing this suspension in June, July, why don't I do it now? Okay, fine. Let's talk about it. How many of those there are there? Then we started to see some of our Asturian, you know, football bars. Suddenly the Asturian football bars, you know, these are the guys that got football bars. These guys were calling us and saying, you know, my bar has been closed. There's no way I'm going to be showing football. I want to suspend the service. Okay, how many of those are there? So we started to count for those. And then we just started to see some other suspensions and even calling customers to making sure we manage the process. That's the reason why we know exactly in the last 30 days how, you know, how that process has gone through, what's going to be the impact, and how to mitigate it. And that's the reason why we're a little bit confident that we're controlling this. So it's a bottom-up process as opposed to a top-down, is what a lot of the economists. There's another very important element which I'm going to introduce on this call, which probably has not been discussed. Now, where is Euskaltel? We're in the Basque country, we're in Galicia, and we're in, you know, Asturias, north part of Spain. The least tourist-oriented GDPs in the whole of Spain. These are industrial regions, mostly, you know, services. You know, Galicia is all about, you know, concerts, you've got the Inditex, you've got, you know, you've got the manufacturing, but, you know, the Basque country is about manufacturing, it's about services. The least GDP in terms of tourism dependence in the whole of Spain is the north of Spain. And we know that because we've been managing these customers for 20 years. So we know exactly, and we also saw the downturn economy back in 2008, 2007. So we know exactly, you know, the sort of behaviors. And we also know the sort of businesses that have come up since the last, you know, in the last economy downturn. Guess what? In the north of Spain, not a lot of new activity. You go to the rest of Spain, maybe it's different. So when you analyze, you know, the downturn economy and all these big studies that people are doing, you need to be a little bit more precise. You need to come down underneath the covers and look on a per region basis, exactly what is the effect that's likely to have in terms of an economy downturn. By the way, same thing happened back in 2009, 2008. So it's basically the same thing again. You know, and many of the economists, forecasts back in 2008 were also wrong because they did not take into consideration specific activities of every single region in Spain. So you need to be more careful. You need to be more precise about exactly, you know, where each of the, you know, SOHOs and, you know, small office, home office, and even some of the, you know, some of the activities of those SMEs, what are the activities, what are the segments, you know, what are the industry segments that each of them are operating, and what are the volumes of these companies. And then you make a true, let's just say, picture, particularly if you then reflect it to your customer base as to how the impacts are going to come about. And you're able to then not only predict, but more importantly, control those customers on a one-to-one basis, particularly at the SME, the SOHOs, which, by the way, SOHO now is part of mass market. So therefore, we have to look at, you know, SOHOs as part of mass market, and then we're obviously looking at SMEs as part of enterprise. Obviously, large accounts for us, it's a safe haven because the north of Spain, particularly the Basque Country, is a strong safe haven for large accounts. We know that the large industrials, we don't have a lot of the, you know, hotel industries, we don't have a lot of the, you know, airlines, we don't have a lot of the big tourists. That's more in the south, that's more in the east and of Spain, and particularly Madrid. So the north is more about industrial, so the GDPs are very key in terms of analyzing economical impact in Spain. We still don't believe that it's going to be, you know, you have to be very specific on a per region basis, but overall we don't see like some of those, you know, economical valuations with a huge downturn economy, because Spain came out of a 7-8 year sort of downturn economy process where a lot of the, you know, sort of, you know, companies were sort of stress tested to some extent. And so therefore that's very recent. So a lot of our companies have been stress tested, particularly during those 7 years of downturn economy. And we believe that that's going to sustain those companies moving forward. So that's a little bit what I can tell you about, you know, the way we see it and maybe why you're detecting some sort of positiveness in our tone. That's because we've done a lot of bottom-up analysis.
Okay, that's really super helpful. Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Giovanni Montalti from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you. Can I ask how much could have been the year-on-year decline of indirect cost if you were not to have a reduction in the commercial activity in the last part of March? So let's say, excluding the COVID-19 impact on the commercial activity, what would be the year-on-year trend of your indirect cost base? Thank you.
Yeah, I think we do have a number. I'm not sure if it's we're giving it public. I mean, maybe Angelo Alfonso can help me there.
Yeah. We are not giving this number. Anyway, the effect of this COVID-19 in the queue is quite limited to the last 15 days. So what we can say is that the trend has not been impacted materially by the COVID-19. You know, so what you see is the natural trend of what José Miguel was explaining around, you know, putting together three companies into one, and streamlining processes.
So excluding, let's say, the national expansion plan, we should expect the indirect cost base of your core businesses to continue follow this trend, this year-on-year decline in Q2, eventually even in Q3 and Q4, even if the comparison base is going to be tougher. But this is the type of underlying trend we should expect for your indirect cost base.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And can I check if you can give us an idea of the magnitude of the businesses, the number of businesses, small businesses that have already asked you for suspension? As far as I understand, small business is 10% of your total top line. Can you maybe give us an idea of the share of clients, the share of revenues corresponding to these clients that have already asked for a suspension?
I mean, the question is a little bit like the previous one, but in a different manner. We can't give you the specific number, but let me give you some insight, some context, right? So when you're looking at SOHOs, getting back to the previous question I answered about, you know, the bottom-up analysis and the bottom-up monitoring on a daily basis, right? You know, you go down to those retail shops that obviously have closed, right? And by the way, most retail shops in our territories, they have a genuine, you know, because of what I said to you about the robustness of the retailness in the north of Spain, I consider that's the case, because obviously I do have information, for example, about Madrid, and it's slightly different. But in our territories, you know, the traditional, you know, retailers that have been there for, like, you know, lots of years, they, you know, they consider that that, you know, this scenario is going to end, and they're going to get back to business, you know, and we're not seeing a major sort of you know, sort of suspension there. We are seeing suspension from specific sort of niches, like, for example, the students. Obviously, these guys, they don't intend to go back to university. They were going to suspend anyway in June, July. So what the hell, they're going to do it in April? You know, football, you know, Asturias, the football bars, you know, this is a high ARPU, because you're talking around the 200 euros ARPU. Mainly it's, you know, premium content football. There's no football. There's no people coming to the bar to consume that content. So what the hell, you know, suspend it, right? So that's happening. And then you're getting like an underlying suspension, which is slightly probably higher than the average, than the normal, you know, month to month they would expect, but it's, you know, nothing to write home about, right? And that's giving us a net sort of impact on a per revenue basis that I think it's perfectly assumable within the sort of guidance that we gave you at the start of the year, and that's what we're seeing. So, you know, you have to work on a per segment basis, and there are segments like the football bars, obviously, that, you know, these guys are will suspend, and, you know, we can even do a stress test that we assume that all of these guys are going to suspend, even though they haven't, because a lot of those bars consider that they'll get back to business, you know, quite quickly, despite the COVID restrictions, because, you know, people, you know, a lot of people, someone was telling me the other day, you know, what's going to happen, Jose, in Spain? The first thing I'm going to do as soon as I get out is I'm going to go to a bar and have a drink, you know, that's what everybody was telling me, you know. So obviously, you know, independently of the suspension lifts, you know, people will apply the distancing, you know, sort of, you know, recommendations, because obviously it's a bylaw, and they will apply all the restrictions. But people, I think, are assuming, you know, will get back to business, because, you know, we do have a very sort of local, particularly in the north of Spain, very local, very community, a community spirit. Which is maybe why we have been highly you know, infected, because there is a community versus other countries. But at the same time, people will quickly adopt the measures that are needed in order to make sure they get back to the community. And that's what a lot of guys, I think, are still considering. As far as now, okay, there are some suspensions, but we'll get back to normality, even though there will be some restrictions. And that's the sort of feeling we're seeing bottom up, particularly in our strong territories. I would say to you, as I said to the previous, that you really require a bottom-up approach to this, because I don't think you can do a top-down. There is tremendous diversity in Spain in terms of regions, tremendous cultural diversity even within Spain, and I think there's also been tremendous differences in terms of, you know, GDP development over the last 5 years on a per-region basis, and I think you need to take those into consideration.
Thank you, José Miguel. And if I may, a very quick follow-up on the dividend. I see you are confirming the full payment of the dividend for 2019. But what about 2020? What about going forward? I mean, you have a pretty leveraged balance sheet. You have growth ambitions. There is in any case, less visibility than it used to be the case. Until a month ago, in terms of economic outlook. So wouldn't you consider maybe to have more flexibility in terms of capital allocation going forward? Thank you.
This is a board decision. I am the CEO of the company, and I'm always very respectful of my board. But this is a board decision, 100%. Myself and the executive team limit to executing on a mandate. Our mandate is to create the most efficient operational business, not only to sustain our current regions with our current brands, but also to provide a great platform for our national expansion. And obviously, the more we strive on that, and there is an incentive for the CEO not to get involved, because what I want to do is to make sure that I become as much self-financing as possible within our strategy, right? So the more the merrier for us. And that's what I think a CEO should do. This is why I don't believe a CEO should get involved in these sort of decisions. It's a board decision, and we have to focus on just working out efficiencies, extracting more synergies, getting more out of our customers, making sure the customer satisfaction is high. That's where I'm focused. So this is a board decision.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, in order to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. You can also send your questions through the webcast platform. The next question comes from Joshua Mills from Exane. Please go ahead.
Hi there, guys. Thank you very much for the questions. Just a couple from me. The first is coming back to the answer you gave to Akhil's question, which I just want to make sure I'm very clear on this. So it sounds like the KPIs and net adds could be a bit slower this year given the COVID impact, but you're reiterating the revenue growth guidance, which I think implies around 1-2% top line growth even in the core regions. In order to achieve that, are you effectively saying we keep subscribers stable, but then we can push through some price increases? I just want to understand the mechanics of how you grow revenues with a flat subscriber base. The second thing is, my understanding currently is the Spanish market has got a prolongation of the discounts in place. So if you had a discount prior to the lockdown, that's still maintained. And in that environment, it maybe makes it more difficult to raise prices. Could you explain how that works for your own customers? And if so, whether or not we should expect a negative financial impact in the second quarter from the prolongation of those discounts? And then the final one was just on the presentation you mentioned. We're monitoring the number of people who are requesting customer suspensions, customer bill returns, etc. Are you also taking in preliminary orders from people who want to switch to Euskaltel but maybe can't at the moment? And if so, does the number of potential disconnections, which we expect to see when the lockdown lifts, can that be offset by potential reconnections? Thanks very much.
Yeah, good questions once again. Yes, in terms of the revenues, I think you summarized it, what I think we answered previously. An interesting thing, I mean, is to, sometimes you really have to, it's taking us like 3 weeks together, by the way, in one room, sitting together with the regulator, right, to understand the details of the restriction, right? So don't take it wrong if for whatever reason you don't fully understand the whole sort of restrictions, because it's taken the regulator, it's taken all the operators, right, the main operators, together with the regulator, weeks to understand it. And believe me when I say that it's still not 100% shared, the interpretation of that law by everybody. So, having said that, what the law states, or at least this is how we interpret it, is that, during COVID, what you should be doing is, predatory pricing, right? I mean, it's not fair to start doing predatory pricing in such a serious situation, right? And that's what the law intention is. However, we have to maintain our contracts. We've got contracts with our customer. Prior to this COVID-19, the customer has to absolutely oblige to them. Otherwise, this is going to be far west, right? No one wants that. The government doesn't want that. It's not the intent of the law to create havoc, particularly in probably one of the most solid industries in Spain, which is the telecommunications industry. So there is no intent to damage the telecommunications industry. There is no intent to create havoc. Quite the contrary, simply to order, to organize, to make sure there is fair play. That's what's about. And there is quite a consensus. There is meetings with the operators. We sit down with the regulator. When there is, you know, confusion, we end up asking questions. And there's a lot of questions, as you would expect, right? Because, you know, we all have different services. We all have different positionings. Some guys are growth, sort of challenger profiles. Others are incumbents. You know, all that stuff has to sort of play. And so the rules have to be very simple. And the simplicity is, let's not create, you know, credit repricing during this period. But, you know, we have to keep intact, and customers have to oblige, you know, to the legal commitments with the companies. And that's absolutely kosher, right? That's absolutely the case.
Yeah, so that's really easy. To make it very simple then, so if I look on your website at the moment, your family offer is €20 a month for the first 6 months, and then it goes to €66 a month. So if I signed up for that prior to the outbreak, my contract discount was due to extend at the beginning of April. Are you now charging customers €66 or €20?
Absolutely, because, you know, your contract says so. What I'm not going to do is increase prices, right, above that offer. Or I'm not going to now create a new offer, right, different, so that I can actually, you know, come and grab portabilities or do portabilities, you know, do a backlog of portabilities on the basis of a new offer that's going to, you know, divert the competition's, you know, retention effort. That's the sort of stuff you can't do. So you've got to maintain your commercial offers in the market. You've got to maintain them. And you've got to keep to them. In other words, don't create new offers. Do not do things that are going to, you know, rattle, you know, the competition. Because at the moment, you know, everybody like us, 80% of our effort is more about connecting customers, making sure robustness of the network, making sure our people are safe. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that every single operator in the industry has got those three priorities as the number of priorities. So what I think the intention of the law is, guys, just keep things as they were, right? Don't create things that could rattle or could, you know, disadvantage people that are focused on those three priorities. That's the intention. So that's what the law says, or that's how we interpret it, and that's what we're executing, right? And I must admit, you know, I don't know every single offer in the market, because, as you know, there's a lot. But, you know, my view, this is what's happening, right? In fact, have a look at Telefonica. I think someone just mentioned that Telefonica has launched a mobile-only offer. Well, okay, fine. I'm not really sure if even that's possible. But anyway, they've done it, so it's probably possible under their interpretation. You know, we have kept our offers stable. In other words, what we had prior to this COVID, it's still what, you know, still what we're selling. We haven't changed anything. We're keeping things as what we interpret the law says, which is just keep things as they were. Don't create anything that could rattle, you know, the market. And that's what we're doing. And so therefore, that's, you know, that's the approach. Now, so that doesn't affect if you have planned any price increases, any service uptakes, you know. So post the COVID-19, you know, we get back to normality, right? And to some extent, that's what's happening. I think, you know, we implemented price increases in, you know, in January in two of our brands. I think Euskaltel and R. We couldn't apply the same, you know, the same pricing in Telecable because of systems issues. We had to delay that, and so that's been postponed to post the COVID-19. Fine. So that, you know, that's the sort of stuff that we're having to do. But, you know, this, it's not like a major impact that's going to take us out of whack, right? And that's the reason why we're confident on the guidance. So this is a little bit the dynamics, and that's why I said to you guys, the emphasis is on management, managing the COVID-19 situation, and that's what we're trying to do, right? So this is a little bit the, you know, so as far as we're concerned, post the COVID-19, which is a law, by the way, it's by law, you know, things get back to normality, hopefully sooner than better. Now, are some customers actually being backlogged? For sure. Because, look, there is a, you know, the regulator has imposed a 25% limit on the number portability, but only a 50 unit on the fixed portabilities. So, by the way, if you go 25% on portabilities, that's also a mismatch with the 50%, with the 50, you know, portabilities on fixed. So if you're providing self-provisioning on the mobile to, say, 25% of your quota, you are going to have backlog on fixed portabilities as we speak. And that's probably happening. It's happening in Euskaltel, but it's probably going to happen in other operators. So you are going to have, once the COVID, you know, is reinstated, you are going to have some backlog things, you know, that are going to happen. It's a consequence of the rule that the regulator has imposed, right? It's just natural. So what you've got to do is make sure that whatever you're doing on your commercial activity, you're keeping track of all those commitments with customers. And I think customers are going to comply with those commitments. Have I answered your question?
Yes, that's very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Fernando Cordero from Banco Santander. Please go ahead.
Hello, and thanks for taking my two questions. The first one is related with also customer behavior, in particular in B2C. You have commented already some potential upselling in last accounts. I would like to know if you are experiencing any kind of upselling trends in B2C, particularly on fixed broadband services. And secondly, on the self-installation issue or situation that you have described before. The first one, what is the impact in the subscriber acquisition cost when you can offer self-installation to a new fixed broadband app? And secondly, which are the prerequisites that that client require in order to be self-installed, in order to understand what could be as well the potential going forward? Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, just on the B2C broadband, the upside potential we see there, we're doing a lot of work, is not as evident as in the B2B. The B2B guys, these guys need to get their employees up and running. They've got congestion issues. They've got capacity issues. So there's a lot of work with the B2B, right? Enterprise, as you would expect. In the B2C, is more about, you know, I decided not to have a fixed line at home because I was told that I didn't need it by some of the low-cost operators. So therefore, I'm sort of being dependent on mobile. And now, guess what? I can't watch television properly. My kids don't, you know, can't have Wi-Fi. After my mobile, my kids don't have Wi-Fi. So, you know, these are the sort of needs that are suddenly happening. You know, people are saying, you know, something. I need a global offer. I can't have this low cost without television, without fixed line. You know, this is not good enough. I got to have a global operator. And so that stuff we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of that stuff, right? At the same time, we're seeing a lot of, you know, upgrades. That's the reason why you saw those 3,000, right, services uptake during the quarter. Why? Because there's a lot of guys that didn't have your fixed line, and so suddenly, oh, shit, shit is hit the fan. I got to get, you know, Wi-Fi because I got the kids, I got the family, I got the wife, I got myself. You know, we got to connect. And we got to work, and you know, I cannot afford to do it from the phone and so on. So suddenly you get more uptake, even in your own customers, in terms of service. This is great for us because obviously you saw what's happening. You know, we have actually grown on a B2C basis. We've actually grown revenue on our core business, which is, you know, the fixed broadband. We've grown revenue, right? However, we've actually lost mobile only customers. Why? Because they've become, you know, converging customers, and we have lost some of the equipment sales. Obviously, people are more worried about service than, you know, buying, you know, new handsets. So, you know, so that's an interesting dynamics that I think it's interesting to view from a B2C point of view. This is sort of, you know, bottom-up dynamics, you know, Fernando, that I think we have to be monitoring. And, you know, I would tell you that, you know, to probably, you know, speak further with our team, because it's probably not, there isn't enough time on this call to be able to give you the full spectrum. And probably the same applies for your next question, because on your next question, the installation, you know, spectrum is very huge. I'm just going to give you a few examples. But once again, if you're interested, we're going to have to probably have a session with our, you know, myself or the IR team to go through it. But let's just explain. Okay, you know, in Spain, there's multiple technologies. We've got cable, right? So that's a no-brainer for us. We can do self-installation. By the way, we are the only one that can do self-installation on our network. No one else can do self-installation on our network. However, let's just talk about FTTH. As you know, we are connecting, you know, 13 million homes passed on FTTH. We've got FTTH even in our own traditional regions. Guess what? There's multiple different technologies there that allow different sort of modalities, as we say, modalidades, as we say in Spain, but different sort of types of self-provisioning. Some are very self-provisioning, particularly if the customer has got the boucle, we call the fiber boucle or the fiber loop in use. The regulation allows us to reutilize that fiber loop. And so therefore, self-installation there is very simple. However, if the customer is not connected, right, or for some reason the previous operator is actually churning that loop, then we have to go through a more, you know, long-winded sort of process in order to get self-provisioning happening. So I've just given you some examples. But self-installation, you know, there is six probably different types of technologies versus customers that allow a 100%, let's just say, full configuration versus maybe a partial full configuration to the then having a complete provisioning process. There is a barrage of different circumstances that allow you to have that. This is the reason why, you know, in our sort of current regions, we are probably around the 15 to 20% so far. Why not 100%? Because of those different complexities that do happen. However, I think post-COVID-19, that's going to grow. And that's going to be great because every time we go from a customer, you know, to self-provisioning, not only do we actually reduce the time to provision, which is key for customer and for us, but also we reduce cost. Because when you're sending an engineer to provision a customer, that's very expensive, as you know. And I think Alfonso can probably give you details as to what's in the SAC. Because remember, that's a SAC cost. That's part of our SAC capex that we gave you some sort of guidance back at the business plan. So, you know, the more self-installations we do, the lower the SAC is going to be. So it's our emphasis, you know, it's our incentive to actually go self-provisioning as much as we can. That's the reason why we implemented these processes back last year, because we wanted to go self-provisioning, not because of COVID, by the way. We didn't know about COVID, you know, but because we wanted to reduce the SAC, right? So this is a little bit the dynamics. I'd invite you to have a session with Alfonso just to go through some of those different, you know, modes of provisioning so as you get a proper sort of, you know, number, and then you can actually gauge how many of these installations do you do per month, how many of these you do per month, and then you probably work out, you know, what's going to happen going forward. Again, have I answered your question?
Yes. Thank you, José Miguel.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, there are no further questions in the conference call. I will now give back the floor to our speakers. Thank you.
Okay, well, guys, thank you very much once again for joining us. I know it's very difficult circumstances for all of us. Just to let you know, we're working hard to contribute to getting this, you know, resolved as soon as possible, just like all of you are. I obviously thank you a lot for being here. I wish you lots of, you know, keep safe and the best for yourself, your family, and your colleagues. And look forward to seeing you at the next, you know, Q2 call. So thank you once again.